You're listening to Opus Talks, where you'll be in on conversations with insiders in the energy, chemicals, and environmental commodities markets. Guests share insights into the latest trends and innovations, industry challenges, and much more. Let's dive into the conversations that explore where the energy economy is headed, right here on Opus Talks.
Welcome to Opus Talks. My name is Denton Cinquegrana, and I'm the Chief Oil Analyst here at Opus. And joining me here today, as always, is my co-host, Brandon Gormley.
Always a pleasure, Denton. As Denton said, my name is Brandon Gormley, and I'm the Executive Director of Retail Software Sales here at Opus. And today joining us is Nathaniel Doddridge, Senior Vice President of Fuel Operations at Casey's. Welcome, Nathaniel.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Let's just get to know Nathaniel, the guy. You know, let's start with your journey. How did you get into this business? How long have you been at Casey's? And, you know, kind of the big thing is also, how have you seen this industry evolve over that time?
Yeah, you bet. So it pains me to say this, but because it just ages me a little bit. But in July, I'll be 21 years in this space. So, out of college, I have only been in the C-store industry. So I've been with two companies over my 21-year career, spent majority of my career at Murphy USA, and then the last 8 years or winters, as I normally say to most people, moving from the South to the Midwest, last 8 years in Iowa. But yeah, it's been quite the journey. You know, I've been fortunate enough to work with now, I guess, the third and fourth largest convenience store operators in the U.S., and so having that opportunity and that visibility has been just for me super humbling. But you know, I got started out really just running convenience stores for Murphy. I'm an operator at heart, and so you know, at the end of the day, everything we do should be about serving our guests and serving our team, serving those guests. And so it's really nice that I started out in store operations. But I did that for the first few years of my career at Murphy, and then in 2008 transitioned into fuel, and I've been the gas guy ever since. And so, you know, I've worked across every facet of the fuel space, either at Murphy or Casey's. And with that, it's been interesting to see this journey of the molecule over the last 21 years and of the space. And I say this a lot, but, you know, gas just isn't gas. Diesel isn't just diesel. And the number of SKUs we deal with, yeah, you know, on the fuel side of the business, we don't deal with thousands of SKUs like they do inside the store. But, you know, you look at the Casey's business today, we're selling, you know, 30 to 40 different types of fuel across our 20 states. And so I think that's been probably one of the bigger things that I've dealt with over the last 21 years. It's just that evolution of products, whether it's higher blends of ethanol, higher blends of biodiesel, you know, the ethanol freeze, the RVPs, all those different things. And so, you know, I would say that's probably been the biggest change for me is just the evolution of the product itself. I think the other thing, if you look at the space in general, I think it's been a big change over the last 21 years is the exit and the re-entrance of, you know, some of the big oil brands like the BPs and the Shells. I think that's obviously a big talking point the last few years as those folks have re-entered the space. I think the other thing that's probably over the last 21 years as I think about what are some of the big things is RINs, the RFS, right? That has changed the space so differently. Who knew that we would be tracking Colonial Line space as a cost of goods? I think that's a big one for us. And then when you look at the C-store space in general, I think the evolution has really been around food. And for me, I've been able to intimately see that, you know, coming from Murphy, which was, you know, a core business of theirs was fuel and smokes. And now, you know, at Casey's over the last 8 years where they had a core food business, I think that's accelerated our attraction of guests because we've seen folks try to catch up in that space. And so we're definitely seeing, you know, this expansion of food in our space, which again, growing up in the convenience store industry, most folks don't say, hey, I'm going to have a meal at a gas station. But that's common. That's becoming more common now.
Yeah, and to your point about the food side of things, it's been more than once that I've seen maybe someone in Iowa or, you know, well within Casey's original footprint, if you will, people have said, yeah, we had our wedding catered with Casey's pizza. You know, and I've seen it more than once, so you must be doing something right on that end. But I did want to start off also the fiscal third quarter for Casey's that ended on January 31st. Early March, the results were released. A few things that stood out to me. The margin, the average margin, 36.4 cents a gallon. And I do want to caveat this because I was looking at and comparing it to the Opus data. Casey's is more than just the Midwest. Guys have expanded tremendously over the past several years. But the Midwest average was 40 cents. So, you know, again, not that far off, but pretty close to it. But one thing that did catch my attention is that same-store sales up 1.8%. Rounded up to 2% versus year ago levels. Everything we see in same store sales data at Opus, gasoline demand points to a loss. So what's a bit of the magic there that helps you guys grow the same store sales?
I will say on the margin side, who knew that we would be in a world where it just rolls off of our tongue 36 cents per gallon. Talk about evolution in the space. Talk about fuel margin going from low to high single digits to a world where even the hypermarkets report high 20s, low 30s from a CPG. So that's been a big change. But, you know, on the same store sales perspective, gosh, you're right. You know, it has been, you know, we've had a really good track record over the last several quarters of outpacing some of the benchmarks. And I'll say, you know, as a fuel guy, I will share in some of that tailwind with the folks inside the store. You know, you look at our brand, you look at what we're able to do from the brand, and it's just not about what the price is on the street. It's about what's going on inside the store. How's our team engaging our guests? How are we attracting and retaining customers? You look at our growing rewards program where, you know, we have over, I think, right at 9 million highly engaged, highly active rewards members. Those are things, right, that keep those numbers going in the right direction. But when you look at the fuel piece specifically, I think two things that should be noted is, you know, one is, you know, we've continued to see nice strength from the diesel customer. You know, they're kind of post-COVID, you kind of saw some diesel strength, you saw that pullback, especially from the commercial diesel customer. But as of late, we've seen that cut. Feels like we're kind of finding a nice new balance for our diesel demand. And so we're seeing some nice support from the diesel customer. I think the other big one, and this goes back to our growth, is we're seeing nice ramp from some of our acquisitions. And so you take some of these acquisitions that we've brought into our same site number over the last couple of years, and we've invested mightily in those stores. And when you bring our capabilities into those locations, our food into those locations, our guest focus in those locations, people come back. We're seeing that traffic grow. We're seeing those volumes continue to, like you said, outpace what some of the benchmarks are. I don't think we should fool ourselves and say that we are in a climbing demand environment, right? We know that gasoline demand in general is going to continue to be under some pressure, but we think that, you know, those two pieces generally have been really good pillars for our gallon growth over the last quarter and even some quarters prior to that.
Now there's what, about 3,000 stores within the network, 20 states. What are those states and areas that are kind of the newest to Casey's, and what opportunities do they present for you guys?
Yeah, so, you know, with the Fikes/CEFCO acquisition, you know, we entered some net new states. So Mississippi, Alabama, Florida, Texas. We were in Texas about a year ago. We bought some locations just north of the Dallas Metroplex. So we were kind of in Texas last year, but with the CEFCO acquisition, that gave us another 150 locations in Texas. So that's a big growth state for us. You know, a year ago, I would have never told you that we would have been in the state of Florida. So that's definitely new. But you look at the legacy Casey's growth, some of our newer states would be, you know, states like Kentucky, Ohio, Michigan, Tennessee, and Kentucky specifically. We had some legacy, new to industry growth in those states, but we've really increased store count in those states by acquisition, you know, through pilot locations in Tennessee, and then through some EG locations in Kentucky.
You know, CEFCO kind of being the most recent one. How are those site transitions going, those 150 stores or so in Texas? You know, it doesn't happen overnight. How's the progression going?
Yeah, I would say as expected is probably the general, you know, thought. But, you know, this one's a little bit different for us because, as we have done maybe historically, is we move in pretty quick and make those Casey's locations. We're a lot more, going to have to be a lot more methodical with these just because of just some constraints on locations and some other things that are attached to these. You know, most of those will eventually have a Casey's brand on them. That's not the case today. So we're kind of running them kind of do no harm is kind of our goal right now with CEFCO, is most customers likely don't have any idea that Casey's owns those locations. And so because we haven't really done a whole lot with the locations. You know, one thing we've talked about publicly is we did from day one, which was, you know, in November, we did take over the fuel pricing responsibilities. We've taken over some of the fuel procurement responsibilities and support. So fuel, we've been maybe moving a little bit faster, but the rest of the store, it's a little bit of, again, do no harm until we're ready to come into those locations and put the Casey's brand on the front of the store.
And CEFCO, they also operate a fuel terminal. So where is that located, and, you know, what kind of advantage does that give you guys?
Yeah, it's funny. So, you know, we've talked a lot in, you know, some, you know, publicly about our expansion of our procurement process. 7-8 years ago, we were very heavy into being rack buyers. You know, we've kind of shifted into being more focused on, you know, supply contracts and, you know, leveraging our scale. And so, you know, what the natural progression of that was to start to take some of our own inventory positions and do some shipping and things like that. And so we went live with that in our Q1, which would have been around July. And a week later, we bought a fuel terminal. And so that was a little bit of a faster track than maybe we expected. But that fuel terminal, you know, hats off to the CEFCO team for seeing an opportunity. You know, that fuel terminal really primarily supports their retail business. And so Fikes does have a nice wholesale dealer side of the business. But when you look at the fuel terminal, it's in Waco, you know, which is about 20 minutes north of where their corporate office is at, and really in the heart of their retail network in Texas. And so, you know, when we look at capabilities, we want to make sure at the end of the day, those new capabilities, the core of what they do is support retail. We are a retail organization. You know, a lot of our competitors out there, super sophisticated folks, you know, like Pilot, Loves, Racetrack, they got a lot of other business streams that go with their business. But really, at the end of the day, our number one priority is our retail locations. And so the terminal fits in nicely with the locations. There's some growth around that. There's some capacity. You know, capacity at the terminal is about 170,000 barrels total. And so it's tied to the Explorer pipeline. And so you're able to look farther into the Dallas Metroplex, and, you know, Explorer obviously runs all the way to St. Louis and into Chicago. So it's a nice tuck-in for us that we'll look to leverage and make sure that, again, at the end of the day, we can lower the cost of goods for our retail locations as much as possible.
That's great stuff. Yeah, I think the obviously the terminal obviously fits in nice, like you said. And you know, one of the things that you did say versus just being a pure rack buyer, one of those changes you talked about was RINs. And now, as someone who's, you know, doing more supply deals or, you know, kind of splash blending on your own, you become, you know, it turns into another potential profit line for Casey. So yeah, kudos on that. But are there any areas that you guys potentially look at that might be outside of those traditional 20 states and regions that, I don't know, look compelling?
Yeah, you know what? I think it's what's interesting is we've got a lot of attention, of course, for moving into these new states. But when you look at, you know, the Casey's footprint, so back to one of, you know, talking about core capabilities, core competencies, you know, one of them is, you know, we manage our distribution inside the store internally. So we have an internal, you know, supply chain team. We got three distribution centers in Joplin, Missouri, here in Ankeny, Iowa, and one in Terre Haute, Indiana. And so, you know, that's the core of what drives a lot of our growth. And so when you look at where we've grown historically, it's really been within those networks because, you know, we want to leverage that distribution network for us. And so we got a lot of, you know, white space in these new states. But, you know, oddly enough, 75% of the towns in that distribution network, so towns of 500 to 20,000 people, don't have a Casey's. Yeah, we got 3,000 locations. 1,500 of those are in three states. And so that still gives us a ton of white space within our core footprint, within our core distribution network, to make sure we grow at the right speed. Obviously, you look at a state like Texas, you know, Texas has a few more people in it than Iowa. You know, I think Iowa has 3 million people and we have almost 600 locations in Iowa. So, you know, we might have a little bit of saturation in the state. We have almost 170 locations in Texas. And I think there's 10, 15 million people and a lot of people in Texas. So, yeah, obviously there's a lot of white space in those, but we just want to be thoughtful about our growth. And you know, you look at our growth, we've had a nice balance of, you know, ground up builds. And then obviously the last 3 years, our bar on our growth for acquisitions has outpaced the new ground up builds. But we always go into a year just trying to be as balanced as we can in regards to our growth.
Excellent. Well, Brandon, I'm going to kick it over to you because I know you got some really good questions for Nathaniel as well.
Nathan, you had mentioned your tenure in the industry, now over two decades, and no doubt you had the opportunity to work with some really great industry veterans who took the time to teach you what you know today. How does it feel to be that industry veteran for younger professionals?
Man, that's a scary question. If someone uses my name as an influencer, that gives me a little bit of the heebie-jeebies, because I'm like, oh crap, what did I say? What did I do? Is that a good thing? Or is it, hey, I learned what not to do? But yeah, I will say it's super humbling. You know, I remember early on in my career at Murphy, you know, looking up to guys like Hank Hightouse. Hank Hightouse led the retail organization for Murphy early on. You know, he ended up doing a couple other things after we spun off. But, you know, looking at guys like that and saying, hey, I want to be like that guy. You know, looking at guys like, you know, Josh Henderson. Josh Henderson was my boss at Murphy for a long time. And being able to talk, understand, being able to engage the team and then suppliers and marketers to be able to grow the business. I think, you know, being kind of seen in the same lens as some of those guys and walking into a room and people wanting to actually talk to you and listen to what you have to say is a little bit unique to me. But I tell you, I think the one thing I have to be careful of is I have to be cautious and continue to remind myself that, you know, Brandon, to your point, people are looking up to me as, hey, you've been in the space, you know what you're talking about. And I have to be protective of my words. I think I have to be protective of my strategic direction. And because now I'm the guy that says, go and do. And if we go and do, and it's not the right, you know, right strategy, not, you know, not the right tactic, I'm the guy now that's closest to the sun that's going to burn in those decisions. And so I think I have to constantly remind myself of what type of influence I do have and make sure that I'm protective of the way I interact with my team, with the team, and with folks outside our four walls and the folks I deal with every day.
I've gotten to know you a little bit more over the last year, and the same thing goes with your team. I can attest that at least the folks that I've met so far, the values that I perceivably think that you have and the Casey's organization certainly cascade down to those team members quite a bit. For those who you don't manage directly, what would be some advice that, you know, just starting out in either the C-store space, downstream oil and gas, you know, they just got their first job as a store associate. What would be some of the advice that you would give them?
Yeah, I think the big thing, so I'm a pretty simple guy, right? From Arkansas, you know, I know people beat up on Arkansas a lot and I always say, well, at least we still have Mississippi. But, you know, well, I'm a pretty simple guy. And the one thing I tell my kids and I tell the team this all the time at Casey's is you can do two things. You can hustle and you can listen. And you can do that whether you're running a store, whether you're running, you know, a 3.5 billion, you know, gallon organization like today at Casey's, and don't overthink it. I think, you know, one thing I learned early on in my career at Murphy, I had the opportunity to do a lot of things early on. I moved 5 times in 5 years. That's not always going to be the ask for folks in the space, but, you know, being open early on to doing other things, you know, maybe I've pigeonholed myself a little bit because I have tons of depth in fuel, but maybe I don't have other breadth in other areas. And so trying to get that experience through, yeah, I might not be able to, you know, say that I've ran the prepared foods business for Casey's, but I can engage that team. I can understand. I can study their metrics to say, you know what, again, maybe I'm not running it, but can I understand why they do what they do and kind of build up some of that knowledge a little bit differently? Things like lateral moves at the moment are really painful because you always want to be moving up. If you're moving lateral, it just kind of tends to bring a little bit of maybe just a frustrating feeling. And you know, back to, you know, some of the folks who influenced me before, I remember sitting in a meeting, an opportunity was being presented to me to move into a new space of fuel. So I was moving from retail pricing. I was, had moved into the supply chain side of things on the optimization. Then I was going to have the opportunity to move into the transportation organization. And the opportunity was presented to me, but it didn't come with any additional pay. It didn't come with any additional benefits, incentives. All it came with was exposure. Luckily for me, as I was in the process of declining the offer, my boss at the time kind of cut his eyes over to me and kind of shook his head and was like, hey, this isn't the right move. Like, you want to take this job. So the person that was presenting it to me, which was his boss, was about 5 seconds from pulling that offer back when I said, okay, I'll take it, you know, because I was frustrated because it didn't come with more money, didn't come with more prestige. But, you know, I look back at that decision, and that was one of the things that really propelled me in my career to say, all right, I'm willing to do more, but not get more money, not get more prestige. But it really did set me on a unique path to continue to grow and expand my horizons for the fuel side of the business.
That's awesome. So there's two things that I noted down there, and I underlined both of them is hustle and listen. Probably some of the best answers, some of the best feedback that I think we've gotten on the podcast so far. In actuality, hustle and listen, that's almost all I do when I travel with Denton in various situations that we get ourselves into. So currently, you know, we touched a little bit on the landscape of the industry, downstream oil and gas. So what today could you share, you know, some of the biggest challenges as a senior leader within the Casey's organization, and conversely, some of the biggest opportunities that you have? My assumption would be every year, the bar just keeps getting raised higher and higher for you guys. You guys are massive right now. There's a lot of things that sort of come with that. Challenges, opportunities, where do you kind of fit in that, in that sort of journey?
I think, back to just being simple, I think it kind of boils down to not losing focus on who you are. You know, we're a 50-plus-year-old organization that, you know, started in small-town Iowa that has just a phenomenal footprint, has a phenomenal store offer that we've shown we can execute and execute well, whether we're in that town of 500 or we're in, you know, in Panama City, Florida. And so we can't lose focus of why we're here, how we got here. I think the one thing the industry or just life in general, some lies that we tell ourselves is we have to be really sexy in what we do. We're still just serving a customer who's trying to get from point A to point B most oftentimes. You know, we have become a destination because of our food, but, you know, we are normally, from a fuel perspective, a point in a journey that's not the end destination for that person that's stopping at your store. And so being able to ensure that we're clean, we're fast, we're getting folks in and out, I think we have to just not forget about the basics. And the bar is continuing to raise, but I would say as people get more occupied and more distracted, keep delivering quality products on time, fast, and with good service. I think that's really, really important because, again, we can get really distracted with AI, with automation, with self-checkout, with, you know, EVs, with all these things. And it's like, you know what? we can be really successful just executing our plan. And that's why I think that's the one thing, is because there's always this push to do more and to do different things. So I think that's one for sure. And I think an interesting one for us, and so a challenge, I think, for Casey specifically, and this kind of goes back to our growth, is, and this is Nathaniel speaking, this is not, Darren, our CEO, but I do think as we've grown differently, so grow through NTIs, so new to industry stores, and then grow through acquisition, it creates a much different maybe list of priorities on how you spend your capital. You have stores in Boone, Iowa, that's been around for 50 years, and they have needs in regards to, upgrading the store, in regards to upgrading their coolers, updating their fuel dispensers. But you also just bought, 198 stores with CEFCO that are going to be, require some capital. And so how do you balance where you're putting your energy and where you're putting your time? Because when you're just building new, brand new stores from the ground up, it's pretty simple, right? But when you're layering in some aged assets and some assets that maybe need a little bit more attention or to get the Casey standards, but you also have an aging, legacy group of stores, I think that will be interesting. And, I'm super, super supportive. And I think we got the right team and the right mindset on how we solve this problem. But I think that's probably a more of a unique challenge we've had the last couple of years, just because how we've grown has looked a lot different.
Absolutely. At the moment, is there anything that keeps you up at night?
Besides a bum shoulder, I will say, people. And it's not my people don't keep me up, because I'm worried that they're not doing what they should be doing. What keeps me up at night, or in regards to people, is how am I supporting my people the right way? Needs of folks change. How do we make sure people have the right career path? How do we make sure that they're able to take care of their family? How do we make sure that they have the tools and resources they need to do their job effectively? Because really, I don't worry about things like, I think about demand and I think about margin and I think about systems. I think about Opus data, but they don't keep me up, because I got a great team that's really solving those problems every day. And so how do I make sure I got the right team? I'm supporting them the right way. I'm able to balance my attention with them. I'm able to prioritize. How can I remove hurdles so that they can go execute and execute well? I think that's probably the biggest thing. I think the other thing, and this is a personal thing for me, that it's just a complex I have to figure out how to deal with, is how do we continue to replicate our success? It has been such an awesome ride for me the last 21 years, and really specifically the last 7 or 8 years at Casey's. We just continued to, to your earlier points, is just raise the bar, and it's hard. And, I worry about letting people down. I worry about not being able to be the guy in the earnings call that's outpacing Opus data, right? And so I think that's one for me, that just got to trust the process, trust the team, trust the technology, and I think we'll get there. But those are probably the two bigger things for me.
Yeah. So, and I think that goes back to your earlier point, is, just staying true to the brand and the legacy of the brand. Certainly you and the rest of the team there at Casey's would not be where you are today if it weren't for the day in, day out trials, tribulations, all of the grinding, all the hustle, all the listening, and those core values as well. So I have no doubt, it may not seem every single day that you guys are improving and progressing along that journey, but it certainly seems from an outside point of view that it looks easy. And that's usually a true testament to having the right people in the right roles, doing the right things. So thank you very much, Nathaniel. I'm going to turn it back over to Denton for some wrap up and some last questions, but really appreciate the time today.
Yeah, no, this is great. And Nathaniel, I can't thank you enough for joining us today. But, we learned about kind of Nathaniel and your career path and, as the fuel guy, if you will. Let's learn a little bit. I like to ask a couple just random questions. We know about the bum shoulder and everything, but a few things. I know you played football in college, and I know you're an avid hunter. So again, playing football in college, as someone who played football in college as well, you know, it's funny you said we execute the plan. To me, the way you were describing is was something a football coach, and I'm sure you've heard a football coach say this in the past, KISS, keep it simple, stupid. That's what it sounded a lot like. But, you know, tell me a little bit about your football playing days.
Yeah, you know, I was a slow tight end that probably wore a tight end number because I was a decent blocker. So, yeah, I played Division II football for school, Wichita Baptist University, which is, you know, I give tons of credit to them for just kind of building me into the man I am today and kind of grooming me into the dad, the leader. You know, I'm huge in my faith. And so, you know, building, you know, my eternal, eternal means for me. But yeah, I actually played football and baseball my freshman year, but almost flunked out because that was a little bit too much to take on for a freshman who had never even studied in high school and just kind of got through by the seat of his pants. And so I get into college and like, oh, I can play two sports and I can do all these things. So I still like to play baseball too, and learned pretty quickly that was a really bad call. But yeah, I played 4 years of Division II football and was okay. And ended up, you know, I got to the end of the 4 years. I'm like, oh, I'm going to be a professional athlete. And that clearly was a voice in my head that was wrong, and took the first job offer that came through and ended up being a gas station in front of a Walmart. And here I am.
There's a couple similarities with myself. One, the slow tight end. Yeah, that's me too. Except for I got the call and said, yeah, we're moving you to offensive line. I was like, yeah, I had a feeling this conversation was going to be happening. And also the whole, yeah, you're going to be a professional athlete. You know, you're going to play in the NFL. Yeah, that dream dies pretty quickly. So when they say you could be anything you want to be, chances are you can't be an NFL player. So.
Yeah, that's right. I love the – you know, it's March Madness, obviously. Yep. And I love the commercial that talks about, you know, 99% of all student athletes will go on to be professional in something other than sports. I'm like, that's me.
Bingo. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, we must have been on the same wavelength on our brains with that one. Because there's, you know, at the end of the day, I tell people there's always someone bigger, faster, and stronger. So
always.
Yep. So okay, the other one, hunting. What do you like to hunt for? You know, I don't personally hunt. I do a little bit of fishing here and there, but other than that, you know, clue me in on that side of it.
Yeah, so, you know, coming from Arkansas, I better have a little bit of, you know, country bone in my body. So I kind of grew up deer hunting a little bit, kind of gave it up for a while because I just wasn't very good. And I used it for more just going out and taking a nap in a deer stand. And so, you know, when I started having kids and specifically boys, the boys got into it, especially my middle son. And so that's kind of what he and I do. We hunt. And so we deer hunt. So if you're in Iowa, you better deer hunt, because that's, and when you talk about deer hunting across the U.S., people talk about Iowa deer hunting. And so we've been fortunate enough to buy a small property about an hour south of here in Ankeny. And that's where me and him go. And we spend time deer hunting. And I told my wife is probably once, you know, he goes to college, we'll probably sell the property and I'll go find another hobby. But I love to do it. It's more just from, you know, being out in nature and having nothing to do, having no service on your phone. And but for me, it's really the excitement that he has and the joy he has of hunting deer. And so that's where we spend a lot of our time in the fall and in the winter, is suffering through these Iowa winters in a deer stand. So we try to take our, you know, harvest our deer as early in the season as possible, so we don't have to sit in negative 20 degree weather and hope and pray that a deer, you know, stumbles across our, you know, our path.
Yeah, that seems like a wise move to me. So, well, Nathaniel, I know how busy you are and everything, but I do want to sincerely thank you for joining us today. And, you know, on behalf of Brandon and myself, thank you again. And hopefully we can do it again in the not too distant future.
Love it. Yeah, thank you guys so much. Always a pleasure.
We hope you've enjoyed today's insider conversation on Opus Talks. Join us next time for a deep dive into another industry insider's world. You can find more Opus Talks episodes at opusnet.com/podcasts or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.